You're listening to a podcast from the RSA. You can find out more about RSA events and projects and how to get involved with the fellowship by visiting our website, thersa.org.
I'm Matthew Taylor. I'm the Chief Executive of the RSA, and I'm delighted to be chairing this final session of the day, our self-employment question time. We went through extensive negotiations. They've been going on for months about the role that we would have for UKIP and the Welsh Nationalists and others. In this debate, but in the end, we decided to stay traditional and to invite representatives of the... I think let's use that formulation, the three major parties, for this question time. We'll be hearing about their approach to self-employment over the coming years. I approach this session with two questions, really, in my mind. The first is, to what extent have the parties got a clear... kind of discrete platform for self-employment? It is an area now which has its own kind of proper policy status in the way we would expect for health or education or taxation and welfare. And then secondly, of course, attendant on that question is how different are their views? If we were talking about health or education or fiscal policy, we would have pretty well established and different positions. It's going to be interesting for us to hear how different the positions are in relation to self-employment, particularly given what you've been hearing all day, which is the incredible importance that self-employment now has to our economy and to our society and to people's lives. And the three of you should know that the room is full of people who are self-employed. So there, many of them will be speaking and asking questions from their own personal experience. So we are delighted to be joined by Justin Tomlinson, who's MP for North Swindon and the Conservatives' Small Business Ambassador. Justin has kindly stepped in at short notice to fill in for the Minister, Matthew Hancock, who was called away on urgent business. But we do have representation from BIS, however, because we're delighted to be joined by Jo Swinson, who's Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Employment Relations and Consumer Affairs, and is, of course, also the Liberal Democrat MP for East and Bartonshire. And finally, we have Stella Creasy, who is Labour MP for Walthamstow and acts as Shadow Minister for Competition and Consumer Affairs. So, Justin has kindly volunteered to go first. Justin, over to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to go first. I think that's my reward for having two orange cookies before coming in. Now, I'm pleased to be here because I am a wheeler dealer. At school, if you needed a school locker, you needed to have cheaper goods from the tuck shop, I was your man. And I did Young Enterprise. I thought this was pretty good fun. I went to Oxford Brookes University where I studied business. There were 350 of us. I was the only one who went on to run my own business. The others had entrepreneurial flair and risk-taking taught out of them. I just wasn't paying attention. And I spent 2.5 years as a nightclub manager, so your typical background for a Member of Parliament. And then I set my own business up, which I ran for 10 years. It was called TB Marketing. You'll have never heard of it. But we had a turnover of about £500,000. We lasted 10 years. I sold it once I got elected. So I've employed people. I've had to let people go. I've invested in training. I filled in VAT returns. I've had customers not pay. I've negotiated deals with suppliers. I've opened a shop. We had very pink walls. In fact, Jo is modelling with her dress how our office looked. It was very, very good. I let my staff pick that. It wasn't my choice. I'd got it horribly wrong in the first place. I watched in horror as our health and safety inspector came into the building and the fire exit sign fell on her head. Three times we had to reinvent our business as the market changed. And I've had battles with banks. So I've had 10 years of incredibly enjoyable times. I wouldn't change it for anything. The advice I give to young people is if you are good at what you do, do it for yourself. If you're not very good at what you do, be paid to not be very good. Perhaps that's why I'm now an MP. And the key thing is, despite all the challenges, despite having to learn as I went along, by the end of that 10 years, I can look back, I can be proud it was a success. I did employ people, I did pay tax, I did contribute to the local economy, I did pay my suppliers on time, and I really did feel I made a difference, and it was something that made me a better person. And now my wife is running her own company. It's a dog-walking pet care company, but she's taken it to another level. She's now franchised it to 10 other people around the country. She's empowering women right across the country. They're taking over the whole world. It's fantastic. I've appeared at a few All About Dog shows to hand out cups of tea and coffee, so I'm very useful. And in Parliament, I've championed financial education to go into the national curriculum. Whilst not directly connected to running your own business, it's a vital building block because being able to do mental arithmetic was the way that I negotiated good deals with my suppliers who were too embarrassed to use their calculator. And I'm an unashamed supporter of young entrepreneurs, because I do think more young people should give it a go. Young people have the energy, they have the cheek, they have the enthusiasm to question what is the norm. And also they have nothing to lose, because by this point, most of them wouldn't have a mortgage, they wouldn't have a family. And if they blow their savings, then they're young enough to have another go. So I think in conclusion, that there's a huge amount of pride, it's empowering, it offers flexibility for people. My wife seems to spend a lot of time drinking coffee in Costa, which apparently is crucial to the business. And ultimately, self-employment are the next generation of wealth creators paying the taxes that all three of us can happily go and commit the various governments of the day to spend.
Great, Justin, thank you very much. Joe.
Well, I'd first of all like to wholeheartedly endorse and echo Justin's comments about Young Enterprise. I too loved Young Enterprise, and it encouraged me to go and study business. And I then worked in business, though not in my own business. Maybe that's because I wasn't good enough to do so. But I saw it from a very small micro business with just two members of staff. I then worked for a part of a multinational corporation. And then I worked for a small business with about 13 staff, but rapidly growing, based in a business incubator unit in Glasgow at Strathclyde University that, since I left and went on and became an MP, has continued to grow and now employs more than 100 people. So actually, the way in which people who are self-employed and set up very small fledgling businesses become the larger businesses that employ significant numbers of people for the future is hugely important. And of course, if you add up all of the micro businesses and the employment they create, that is a very substantial number of jobs in our country too. I think it's a really interesting sort of question, how much is self-employment as a thing seen as a policy area? And of course, it increasingly is. But I think it's important not to end up viewing self-employment as sort of one homogenous group, because there are a huge number of different reasons and circumstances why self-employment will suit people. And it's really interesting if you look at the growth in self-employment, which has been very consistent over the years, and of course significantly in the last several years, but that's been part of an ongoing trend. 15% of total employment now being self-employment. You've got of people who are older, over the 65, 40% of the people who are still working at that age are in self-employment, and no doubt there's a range of reasons for that. In terms of part-time self-employment, the rise in this has often been driven by women, and that might be people, I'm not sure whether your wife's working part-time or full-time self-employed, but very often women, not exclusively, but very often when they have children and family responsibilities, will find that self-employment offers them the flexibility that they may not have had in a traditional job. Now, I think there's issues there. There's issues about whether or not employment circumstances are providing sufficient flexibility, and therefore whether larger companies are actually missing out on talent that might be happy to stay and contribute to those businesses, and people are feeling that they have to become self-employed to get the flexibility they need. But equally, it can be welcomed that that is sometimes a catalyst for people setting up what can be incredibly successful businesses and have gone on to do so. So I think we shouldn't treat everybody who's self-employed as absolutely the same. There will be a range of different challenges that are met. That said, there's a lot of common complaints, and whether that's about red tape, and this government, of course, has taken significant steps to cut red tape through the Red Tape Challenge, saving more than £200 million a year of regulatory burden from small businesses. Access to support and guidance and advice in plain English, so you don't have to be a lawyer to understand it, so that you can get the information and resources you need in one place. We've got the Great Business website. We've put together tools about taking on your first employee, which is often the most difficult employee to take on, and there's often a lot of reticence and concern about what that will entail. Interestingly enough, the area of greatest concern about employment regulation is actually from people who haven't taken on any employees. It's people who are perhaps self-employed or sole traders and haven't yet taken on employees. When people actually do it, there is a lot of support available, but we do need to encourage more people to do so. And obviously things like the employment allowance that have given small businesses £2,000 a year towards national insurance can be one way of encouraging people to take that step and employ further. I think there's also issues about pensions, for example, and the pensions reforms that we've seen under Steve Webb will be bringing people who are self-employed into the state pension system properly and fully, and that is very helpful. And also some of the changes, for example, shared parental leave. Women who are self-employed, their partners will be able to benefit from shared parental leave in a way that currently is not possible, and so that is a good step in the right direction as well. But the final point I would make is also a note of caution. It's great when you see entrepreneurial flair and people setting up on their own and becoming self-employed. But there's also, I think, a degree of concern about false self-employment, which also exists. And in particular, if people are feeling under pressure to declare as self-employed or to operate in that basis when previously it would have been a traditional employment relationship, and there's been, particularly in the construction sector, lots of concerns about this. And that's worrying from a Treasury perspective in terms of the taxation elements of that. But as the Employment Relations Minister, I'm also worried about the employment protections aspect of that. And so I think we need to make sure that you know, we're talking about genuine self-employment, and that's why we've got the Employment Status Review, which Vince Cable set up, which is looking at the different employment statuses of employee, worker, self-employed, to make sure that we've got the definitions right, because sometimes I think there's too much of a grey area, and that can lead people to be unclear about what their rights are. So I think it's exciting that there's this growth in self-employment, but I also think we need to make sure that that we understand it better, that we support the people who are self-employed, and we also make sure that it is not used as a means of exploitation for people who actually are effectively in an employee relationship.
Thank you, Jo. And last but not least, Stella.
I need to start with a confession. I hated Young Enterprise. Absolutely hated it, mainly because we were forced. I was at an all-girls school, and we were forced to do it with the local boys' school, and the boys therefore did very little in the team that we were in, and we had to do most of the work. So therefore, Justin, I am delighted to hear that you are so supportive to your wife's business and making cups of tea and coffee. Who says progress isn't possible? I think it's worth, first of all, reflecting quite what the issue is that we're talking about and just how different that is. When we're talking about 90% of the new jobs that have been created since the financial crash being within self-employment, we are facing a fundamentally different type of economy and fundamentally different vision of what work looks like and what relationships people might have within the workplace to the one that perhaps a lot of our policy, a lot of our social and institutional structures are based on. So that creates all sorts of interesting challenges for us in terms of keeping up with that and also understanding quite what those trends represent. I'm conscious that the RSA research on the whole shows that most of those people going into self-employment do want to be in self-employment, and therefore one could argue that we're in the start of a Marxist revolution where increasingly the powers and means of production are in the hands of the workers. But there are also people for whom this has become a necessity, and there are also people, as Joe rightly points out, where actually, although they are self-employed, there are concerns about whether that's actually an employee relationship that we need to support them in challenging. We also see an awful lot of people who are continuing to work within traditional forms of employment and taking on employment. 22% increase. I think of a lot of, frankly, of people in my community who worked within the public sector and who've either lost their jobs and gone into self-employment, some successfully, some not so successfully, some who've had their hours reduced and are then working in self-employment positions. Most extreme for me was coming across the domestic violence coordinator in my local community, who was also operating as a bouncer at a club that I went to. You can imagine that conversation that we had on the door. But above all, I think the thing that's most challenging to us across all political parties is that only 14% of those people who've gone into self-employment think that government gets it, think that government is actually providing the support to them to be able to work in the ways in which they want to work. And it's certainly very clear that these trends are not going to decline, that this new way of working, this new way of organising our society is going to become an increasingly large part of the way in which we live. And that means that we have to rethink a lot of the structures around. And in particular, if you think about some of our employment law and employment rights, they're based on that more traditional model that you would have a relationship with an organisation that would be your employer, and that therefore there were a series of rights that would enshrine the kind of conduct, the kind of expectations that you had, the kind of protections that meant that we had a workforce that was able to succeed, but also an economy that was able to thrive. I'm thinking in particular of some of the presumptions that are on things like the social charter. when you look at how the employment landscape has changed so much in the last couple of years, I think that does call into question some of those presumptions that were made, not just in terms of how you make sure that somebody is treated fairly within the workplace if they're a contractor, and the vision of perhaps people ending up being taken to the small claims court on either side rather than perhaps traditional employment rights is one spectre we ought to talk about. But also then those more broader questions around pensions, around how you make things like the universal credit, which of course makes a series of presumptions about someone's earnings on the basis of them getting a regular income, how you make those systems work for those groups of people. The one other thing I think it's just worth reflecting on is also how you deal with the changes, because to think of self-employment within our economy without thinking of the broader changes in our economy and just how quickly our society is changing doesn't make any sense to me. A lot of the growth in self-employment, as Joe has pointed out, has come from women. We're also seeing that because a lot of women have got involved in selling online. I don't know whether Justin's dog walking service can also be found online or not, but certainly the way in which our economy is changing because of new technology means that within traditional visions of how that would affect a workforce, you would have training and support within your workplace. You would have a series of people who would help you guide through that transition, who would deal with the disruption. After all, if we look at some of those other industries in the sort of 1980s, 1990s, it was indeed called upon government to help whole swathes of society cope with disruption within their workplace. This Christmas, many of us will have seen what happened with CityLink and all the employees there who were self-employed. How do you help people cope with changes in their industry? How do you help people cope with changes in the way in which, just within that industry, within the courier industry, things were happening? I'm thinking of perhaps, for example, some of the concerns we've seen from taxi drivers about things like Uber. Well, how do we help whole swathes of our society cope with disruption when it comes from, say, robot-driven cars? Without those traditional infrastructures that came from our presumptions about the workplace, managing change is going to be a lot harder. To me, that makes a much stronger case for that social charter and for some of the work that some of our unions are doing. For example, Bechtu has always been very good at working with people who are freelancers to support them in how they negotiate, how they deal with legal services, but also how they, as an industry, adapt to change. And I think those questions about how you adapt and indeed how you make sure that everyone can benefit are going to become even stronger as our economy moves so quickly and as more and more people move into self-employment. I think that's a really exciting area, but it comes with risk and it comes with precariousness. And just as we need to crack down on people who are forcing people into self-employment as a way of avoiding things like national insurance payments, so we also need to recognise we have a secondary duty to those people who are going to struggle with that pace of change and the way in which our economy is changing accordingly. Thank you. Thank you, Stella.
OK, I'm just going to ask one question because I want to use the time for you. Stella, I kind of gather from the end of what you said a suggestion, which is that one of the priorities for us in relation to self-employment might be strengthening the kind of collective support, not necessarily state support, but the collective support that is available to people. Let me ask each of you then, I'll start with you, Joe. If there was one thing that you thought that was the most useful thing that we could do to help the self-employed or to shape the self-employed sector into the most positive form that it would be. It doesn't necessarily have to be something the government has to do, but what would be the thing that you think would be the most powerful thing?
Well, I mean, I think some of this probably happens already, but I think the way in which it could be better coordinated is that peer-to-peer support. I mean, we know that in setting up in business that things like mentoring can be hugely important. You know, government's invested a lot in different mentoring programs. I was at a fantastic sort of speed dating event last week in Glasgow where mentors and mentees were sort of meeting each other to set up relationships and share experiences. But I think that it can also be quite an isolating experience being self-employed, and therefore being able to get the advice from peers when things are going wrong or you come up against a problem, and actually harnessing the power of the internet on that through sort of a community, an online community of self-employed. I mean, in the professions you have your major organisations, your BMA and so on. You've got various different trade associations in different areas, but I just wonder whether there is a role for sort of self-employed people to come together and provide more mutual support as well.
Great. So Stella, it looks like Joe's stolen your idea. No, you haven't, of course, stolen it, but you reinforced Stella's idea that it's around kind of collective support for self-employed, so they're not isolated, they're not exploited. So is there a consensus emerging? Is that as being the priority?
Look, first and foremost, I think we need to understand better quite what we're looking at, because we do know that when you look at people who are self-employed, even they're full-time self-employed, they're earning around 20% less than their counterparts in a conventional job. And one of the issues for us right now, I mean, we in the Labour Party have been holding a number of summits and looking at self-employment for some time, is actually understanding quite what that then means for people, whether it's about peaks and troughs in their income, whether it's about people using self-employment to undermine rather than strengthen flexibility in the workplace. So I think first of all, we need to better understand the challenge. So if you talk about collective issues we have to deal with, we think that the workforce survey, which doesn't include any of people who are self-employed, we should be looking at that and understand better the incomes that people are having. After all, a lot of our policy basis is based on that. My second point,
I'm making this wrong, but it sounds like a kind of process of like the kind of worthy poor and the unworthy poor. It's a kind of good self-employment versus bad. Is that what this is about? About being able to kind of draw a line eventually and say this is benign self-employment and this is malign self-employment?
No, look, in any sector, we try to understand what the earnings income and the income potentials are to be able to support people. So it makes sense to us to be able to understand what is happening, given that self-employment is here to stay, what people are earning and where that's coming from. As Joe would say, there's no disagreement within the political parties, I don't think, unless Justin would disagree, about where people are being forced into self-employment, essentially bogus self-employment, that actually that isn't right within a market because that's undercutting people rather than giving people flexibility. The flip side of that is about that collective provision. If you think about things within the social charter, it's all based on the idea there'd be an organisation that you would work with, that you would negotiate with. Well, if we're going to help people who are self-employed have pensions and we have an auto-enrolment system, who are you going to auto-enrol with unless we have a different framework for dealing with people who are self-employed? So too, how do you help people make sure that they're able to negotiate contracts? And I'm just very interested in that there are a number of trade unions looking at how they can support people who are going into self-employment within their sector, looking at that legal advice, looking at the networks, looking at how you might help people also with training and personal development. My final point was simply about the pace of change being so sudden that we can't afford not to keep skilling people. And actually one of the things that's interesting to me about the self-employment boom is people wanting to be in control, people wanting to be able to run their own business, to be self-contracted, to be able to be freelance. But actually, if the industry that they're walking into isn't going up to that too, then that's not necessarily going to work for them either. So how do we help people move into new industries? How do people exploit opportunities as they come up as well in a more fragmented workforce?
So, Justin, the chief finding on this question, and I kind of, just to come off the back of what Stella said, one of the kind of interesting things about this debate is that all the political parties are in favour of self-employment, but they're all also in favour of improving the productivity of the British economy. There is a tension between these things because the self-employment sector is, generally speaking, aggregately a lower productivity sector. So I'm interested in your response to that, but also your view about what it is that needs, how the sector needs most to be supported.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because I think when you're self-employed and you are relying on yourself to be able to pay your mortgage and keep a roof over your own head, it doesn't half focus the mind on being productive. But, I think Joe made a very important point about mentoring. My wife was a lot more successful than I was with my business in the sense of she's never been afraid to ask for help. And people often think you need to ask professional bodies and pay a huge amount of money, or ask people who have absolutely no knowledge of running a business. And actually, most business people are happy to help other business people. And business is about building relationships, and good business people can do that, and collectively you can make a difference. But the thing that I would do, and I've pushed this time and time again, and all sorts of very clever ministers have agreed with this, but it hasn't yet happened, so I'm going to fly my flag again, is that business people are incredibly busy, especially if you are a small business, a sole trader or just employing a few people, because you are doing lots of roles. You're the salesperson, you're the personnel department, you're the accounts department. So governments come up with clever schemes. All governments of all political persuasions come up with clever schemes and incentives to encourage and support business people. But they pass you by. In the 10 years I ran a business, I'd have missed out on because I was too busy trying to keep my business going. But the one thing I did do every year was open my business rates mailer. So the government has already paid to post a letter to me, so why not include a leaflet in there? So, for example, we have offered incentives to take on apprenticeships. That's good for young people who are getting those apprenticeship opportunities, good for the employers. We've been offering advice on how to improve exporting, because this country isn't great at exporting, and if we are going to have a balanced recovery, we need to step up our game on exporting. The whole banking system has changed, but there are new options now to get finance. And again, governments have been doing things on this, and we can communicate all of these things without any extra costs, we've already paid for the postage, through the business rates mailer. I've lost count of how many brilliant politicians have said that is a great idea, and it still hasn't happened. But I'm hoping today this forum will lead to changing the whole self-employed world. That's our pledge now.
Well, I'm sure that idea has been tweeted into the lively conversation taking place around this summit. Now, what I'd like to do is to try and take two rounds of questions at least. So if you could keep them short and snappy and tell us your name, that would be great. I'll take three or four, bring the panel back in, and then take three or four more.
Hi, good afternoon, panel. My name's Erkan Ali. I'm from B Collaboration, and I'm a fellow. B Collaboration essentially is a stable of specialists, including business coaches, consultants, all sort of exactly the type of micro consultants and people out there wanting to help businesses. One of the things we've found really challenging today, I've heard over and over again, is people want help. We are resourced to help people. We've got the expertise. And we're finding that business owners aren't as open to it as you might think. You know, you talk about, I mean, I'm a GA registered coach, which is Growth Accelerator. We're Growth Voucher registered, Leadership and Management registered, et cetera, and to get people to hear that information, the funding to support that message is pretty much we're a Lone Ranger outfit going out there to try and make the difference.
Very good. Only at a self-employment summit would you have so much of a question taken up with an advertisement. But it was a very effective advertisement. No, absolutely. You're entrepreneurial, sir. There we are.
I'm an RSA survivor. I fit into that tribe. What I'd like to see
what
out
your
of
name?
This,
Sorry.
Fiona Crawford.
Okay.
What I'd like to see out of this forum is government truly understanding the difference between a micro business and an SME, because they are different and they have different needs. And for the micro businesses to grow, we need a different type of support.
Hi, my name's Erica Watson from Prowess. We are an online centre for women in business, and that's what my question's about. And it's great that you've all mentioned women. So it's on the agenda. You know that it's an issue. During the recession up to now, actually last year, women were 70% of the new self-employed. That's an astonishing figure, given that women were always a minority when it came to self-employment. When we look at the support and investment going into the self-employed, where there are statistics and they're hard to find, women get just 30% at most of that support and investment. So what I'd like to suggest is, one, let's keep stats on the higher levels of investment like Regional Growth Fund and indeed growth vouchers as well, which anecdotally we hear women access at a much lower level, and that's where a lot more of the money is going. And two, I'd just like to ask the panel what you have to say about how we can really get behind all these new women's businesses. There is lots of funding going out there to support businesses. Women aren't seeing an awful lot of it.
Great. Three fantastic questions. Don't feel, panel, you have to respond to all of them or repeat what anyone else has said, but Stella, go to you first.
Right. Let me go in reverse order. Absolutely, Erica, I agree with you. I've actually been tabling questions about whether the government is monitoring the gender of the people getting some of the money that they are putting into funds, partly because of this exact issue. We know that your European counterparts are much more likely to get finance. And that's quite an interesting, challenging question, because if women are the majority of these new businesses coming forward, you can't tell me that their startup and failure rate is going to be any different to men. So there's something there about how we're accessing finance, and you're right, it's one of those issues about what is it about people's expectations. The other thing I've been doing is writing to major companies in this country and asking them what their supply chain policy is, because in America they actually monitor women in the supply chain. It's amazing how few companies have even begun to think about these things, to think about what they could be doing to support and invest that new generation of entrepreneurs. And I think there's a lot more that we can do proactively to start challenging some of this, because if that entrepreneurial spirit is being hampered, not because there are good ideas, but because there are old expectations about what people are capable of, we're missing out on talent. Your second point, Fiona, about the micro business support is very live, and apologies to Jo because she wasn't on the committee with the Consumer Rights Bill. We spent a long time debating why actually micro businesses as opposed to SMEs should get consumer rights, because the idea that you can negotiate in the same way a large business could the costs around your phone bills, your energy bills, yet you're paying business rates, just didn't make any sense to us. You're a sole trader trying to manage everything. It's a very, very difficult situation. The FSB came out supporting, and I think the government will get there eventually, but actually that wasn't written into the legislation, and it was voted down. And I think you're right to point out that there's a presumption that small business means the same thing. I'm very mindful of the difference between people who are contractors and people who are sole traders and people who are running very, very micro businesses, that there's a diversity within the sector that we need to be better at accommodating. I think that's why, first and foremost for us, you know, if you think about traditional labour market surveys, they had quite a lot of detail in. We have very little detail about the self-employed boom in the UK at the moment, and actually more of that, and thank you to the RSA for the work they're doing on that, would really help us. And it's one of the issues that came up in the roundtables that Labour's been doing on this, is understanding the range of issues people are dealing with. You know, when we know that lots of people who are self-employed don't get a mortgage, is it just people who are sole contractors, or actually is there something about particular groups within that that we need new products to address?
Justin, feel free to just say I agree with Stella.
Well, I'm just going to whiz through these. Business coaches and consultants, great advert. I have to say, probably the biggest challenge you will face is that the business people are just simply too busy. But when I had my business, the challenge we'd invite them in, and it was whether I could sell them printing and marketing, and more often than not, they ended up giving me money. So then, micro-business, absolutely. I'm a proud member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Micro-Business, because one of the biggest challenges is not when you first employ a person, it's when you try and go from 3 or 4 employees to 5+, because you as the boss on your own can kind of manage 3 or 4 people, but once you go over 5, it starts sort of, you can't micromanage everybody, and I actually think that's the hardest bit. So actually, micro businesses to small businesses, that's where a huge amount of help is needed. And finally, on women into business, fantastic that there's a correction in this, that the women are rightly catching back up. I'm also a proud supporter of encouraging women into franchising, EWIF, catchy title. I host all of their parliamentary events. My wife has used them well and pushed, as you know, doing her bit to mentoring, because it is empowering and it is something that rightly needed correcting in this country.
Sure.
I think it's fascinating, and I think Justin's probably on the money with the people being so busy to be able to sort of access the help that's on offer. And it's why, incidentally, I love the idea that Justin has about how you get the information out there to people in something that they're actually going to open and to read, because I think that is one of the big challenges. And particularly also the difference between micro and SME. I mean, I talked about some of the companies that I worked for, with the exception of the multinational. All of those technically, small and medium-sized businesses, but, hugely different, actually, from, working from a business base from somebody's house with 2 members of staff to working in a small business with 13 other people. And then, actually, that same business is now employing more than 100 people and yet still in the same category, facing totally different challenges. So I think there is a big difference between micro and small business. I think there's also actually quite a difference between small and medium-sized business. And we do recognise that within government. Obviously, sometimes the shorthand can be useful in some circumstances. The moratorium for micro-businesses on new regulation, unless it's regulation that is particularly helpful to small businesses, of course, has been one of the things we've done to support micro-businesses. And on the woman point, I mean, absolutely right. It is a huge opportunity cost to society that women have been less likely to set up on their own than men have, and we have missed out on huge numbers of entrepreneurs because of that. And that's why we're taking steps to increase the support available to women. And I mentioned the mentoring event I was at last week. I mean, that's part, we've now got 6,000 women business mentors across the country, a fantastic network there. But this is a continual battle, actually. And as well as being a business minister, I'm also the Minister for Women and Equalities. And just changing the mindset. Often people think that something is gender neutral until you point out that all of the case studies happen to be blokes with, typically hard hats and, slightly dirty machinery or whatever else. And then you actually realise that you're not properly reflecting the diversity of the businesses out there. We do have a specific page dedicated to women on the Great Business website. That's not to say that the other pages aren't relevant, but particularly trying to make sure that there is information and that there is that additional encouragement. But I think there's a huge amount more to do, and I'm not going to say we've entirely got this sussed, particularly if you look at things like local enterprise partnerships, which, of course, as a sort of liberal that appreciates, likes devolution of power and, local areas coming forward with ideas, I think that's great that they are local people coming together. But my goodness, the local enterprise partnerships are really pretty male. And so we also need to do what we can to just also, make this case about diversity, because otherwise we will lose out. Our economy will lose out. That's what's been happening. And that's why we need to continue asking that question.
We provide support for business startups. Should we move some of that support to business closures or to help people get from self-employment back into employment? The other point is, are you confident that we're doing enough for young people with our skills system, our schools, to support good self-employment? And if you're not confident, what more would you do?
Okay.
Hi, I'm David D'Souza. I'm a fellow here. Just making the same point I did earlier, but with some MPs up there. Given the criticality to small business and the stress on individuals of late payment by companies that they operate with, would any of you actively support some legislation around swift payment or certainly standardised payment terms?
Stephen Toft, management consultant and blogger. Given that the low self-employment countries in Europe are the rich ones like Germany, Denmark and Sweden, and the high self-employment countries are the poorer ones like Portugal, Italy and Greece, why would you, as custodians of the public finances, want to see more of it?
What a great question to end on. I was kind of trying to get at that earlier on, but you expressed it so much more eloquently than I did. So I think we're going to start with you, Justin. And feel free, at the end of your answers, to leave us with one final oratorical flourish.
Wow, gosh. Are we doing enough for young people? I think that's a really important point, because I made the remark about there were 350 people on my course, Oxford Brookes University, doing business. I was the only one who went on to go and run a business. So, in effect, the education system had taught out entrepreneurial flair and risk-taking. That's not a good thing. I'm encouraged that we're improving the maths curriculum, because that is an essential building block to being an entrepreneur. I think the National Citizen Scheme seems a random thing to say, but the National Citizen Scheme empowers young people, as they're at the stage where they're starting to think about their careers, to create a business to support a local charity. So it's not directly like young entrepreneurs, but again, it gives a taste for people to do that. I'm a huge fan of young entrepreneurs. I understand that Stella's experience was frustrating, so they obviously, I will feed that back into them, and they need to embrace the enthusiasm that Stella brought when she was going through that challenge. But the key thing that we need to do, and I've seen this firsthand, is all too often we let young people do a week or 2 weeks of young enterprise. They do reasonably well and that's it. And when I've organised them back in my constituency, there's a fantastic... I mean, when you're all looking at my website, justintomson.com, I know you do it every day. I'm very grateful. It isn't just my mum looking at it. I've got a link through where I did my own Young Enterprise Challenge. And the difference was, at the end of the scheme, there were lots of enthusiastic businesses, but the ones that were very good, the mentors then helped them and said, you can come back and do this again in the summer holidays, because they were in a market stall. This is how you access finance. So it's actually setting up after that initial burst of enthusiasm. In terms of late payment, I know I sneaked in a bit earlier for the previous session, and I know this frustration that's taken so long to do, that Joe as a minister, Matt Hancock, who I am today, have been bringing this forward. It's something that I support. We just do need to be careful, because not all businesses will pay late to be difficult or to make extra profit. Sometimes further down their line, and there's a bit of a domino effect. So you've got to get that balance, because I had situations, I was always a very good payer because I knew that I could then get better prices. But there'd be times where somebody would default on me or somebody would be late, so I would talk. So I think the emphasis will be on transparency, and I know Joe will cover that in a bit more. In terms of self-employment, well, I'm an unashamed advocate, because I had 10 fantastic years. Obviously, there were better days than others. But I was proud of what I achieved. I was proud that I employed people. I was proud that when we had the recession in 2008, I could say to my staff, we will be okay because we've got reserves. We'd kept money back in the good times. And actually, we spent money on marketing rather than in the good times. So we were ready for that and we could weather it. And we had security and we continue to grow. I was proud of that. If I was to lose my seat, don't panic, Stella, I am 1-8 odds on favourite with Ladbrokes. So fingers crossed it won't be yet. But if I did, I wouldn't hesitate to go back and give it another go. You never know if you're going to be a success, but it's something I wouldn't have sought for anything other than being a Member of Parliament.
Very good. Joe?
I think on late payment, first of all, I mean, this is a huge frustration, and we are legislating in the Small Business Bill that there should be transparency about payment terms, that they can't be suddenly changed without people knowing. And I think there's a lot of frustration about, I mean, there is this thing, what is late payment? So if you have terms that are, you know, 90 or 120 days, then you might be paying within the terms of the agreed contract, but it might, you know, technically it's not late, but it doesn't necessarily help small businesses and suppliers. So I think part of that is about transparency, and that also bringing some pressure to bear on some of the larger blue chip companies that you might frankly expect to behave in a somewhat different way. And I think that is an important way to do it without intervening too much, and if two businesses want to agree a particular set of payment terms that work for them. In terms of the sort of interesting question about whether or not self-employment's a good thing, if it doesn't lead to as much success economically, I mean, I don't know if you can sort of prove the causation on that particular correlation. But, I mean, what I would say is it's also about people having control over their working environment. And we know, I've done a lot of work and business, done a lot of research on the issue of well-being within the workplace and how, obviously, and we spend so much of our lives at work, that has a particular impact on people's lives. And actually, one of the key things that is a factor is the degree of control that you have and how stressful that is if you're continually being told what to do versus you actually making those decisions for yourselves. So yes, I obviously care hugely about GDP and what's happening in particular because of what that enables us to do in terms of taxation, paying for public services, in terms of improving standards of living. But it is not the only thing. There are lots of other things which are important to people's lives as well as the final bottom line. And so there's a mix of reasons why people will choose self-employment, and that's why I think we should celebrate when people do want to do that. And then on the kind of business closures issue, I mean, I think one of the things we need to do is, yes, it may be about supporting people back to employment, but it might also be about supporting people into their next business, because not every business will be a success, and that we should not see as a major problem. And I think sometimes the Americans have a better culture on this, where, you know, a business failure is not seen as the end of the world. In fact, it's seen more like a rite of passage because you learn from it and move on to the next one. So I think that is important. And then finally, in terms of whether we're doing enough for young people. I mean, there are fantastic schemes, and you know, I personally did love Young Enterprise. And there's, you know, there's the Tycoon Tenors, and there's various different schemes which are great. But I do think that one of the things that would make a big difference is for young people at school to come into more contact with people who are doing it as entrepreneurs, who are actually at the coalface. And one of the reasons why that's difficult is that if you happen to have, you know, your son or daughter in, you know, a local secondary school, they might ask you in to speak at the careers day. But if you don't, then you probably don't have the links with local schools. And it's why my final point is this. There's a great initiative, Speakers for Schools, run by Inspiring the Future, which you can Google. And you can sign up and you can say, I will give an hour of my time once a year to go into a local secondary school and speak to young people about what I do in my business. And so that young people can get a whole range of different viewpoints, and schools can then log on and it does a matching service. So I hope that the people in this room will take up that initiative and take action from this and go out and share your experiences with young people.
I hope they don't have the experience of the head teacher I know, who invited a well-known entrepreneur to come and speak to the pupils, and he came in and said, I came to school, I didn't do any work at all, I bunked off all the time and it's been fine for me. Stella.
Well, we had a nun who came in and mouthed the entire words to Brian Adams' Everything I Do It For You, as the inspiration for us. Apparently it was a message from God.
Well, there you are.
With my head teacher then banging her head gently against the desk. So school speakers are always a bit mixed. Let me try and wrap up all of these questions, because it seems to me at the heart of it is this issue about productivity. We are now 20 points behind most of our competitors in the G7. So actually the issues you're talking about low wages, about the cost of living, about people being behind their competitors, are not unique to self-employment. They're to do with the nature of our economy right now and the nature of the jobs that we are creating. Now, you match that against a generation which is, and 30% of young people now want to start their own business. That's a 10% increase on my generation. I call it the Jay-Z effect. It's basically people not just wanting to be in control of their own lives, but seeing other people being entrepreneurs and thinking, well, I could do that too. So like I say, these trends aren't going to go away, but what we have to be able to do, and this is the question for all of us in government, is how do we create the springboard for people to realise that ambition? Actually, how do we make sure that people do it in a way that means that they are successful, not that we're then picking up the pieces? And I go back to some of the questions that we've been looking at in our roundtable about the fact that actually those people who have been self-employed over the last couple of years have had much lower income, so they are struggling much more, and they're finding it harder to get mortgages, harder to save. I think something like less than a third of self-employed people contribute to a pension. So there is a huge issue being stored up in our society if we're not thinking about this as the new world and new way of working. Now, there are basic things that we can do, and yet there are divisions within the political parties on the late payment scheme. My colleague Toby Perkins has been trying to put forward legislation to exactly deal with these issues and to make sure that contractors get paid back with the interest on them as well, and they've been voted down. There is going to be a debate in Parliament in the Small Business Bill about how we do it. So there are the everyday basic things, again, like the Consumer Rights Bill, which are about the day-to-day nature of doing business and making it as easy as possible to do business. Then there are these longer-term trends that we have to deal with. How do we invest in making sure that people get the training and support to be able to move between industries, to be able to be a contractor not just in one field but in many? If we're talking into schools and I go in and I say, look, all the studies show us you're going to do 7 different jobs in your life, 2 of which haven't been invented yet. Some of them might be within organisations, some of them they might define themselves. Well, I want young people in Walthamstow to have the opportunity to do either of those perspectives. That means we have to change the way we think about the world of work and its connection to business, and we all agree about having a closer relationship between businesses and schools. But it's also about thinking about what can we do as a government to create those collaborative relationships, those networks that help mean that self-employment drives up standards, drives up productivity, rather than become a replacement for poor productivity. Because fundamentally, the way that we're going to resolve some of the issues, long-standing issues in our economy, is dealing with that productivity gap. Self-employment can either be part of that solution or it can actually make it worse. And I know what we'd like to see it do.
Thank you. So who knows who's going to win the next election? But I kind of feel if Justin, Joe and Stella were to decide to form a party together, we could all support them, couldn't we, as a kind of coalition government on behalf of small business. So could you thank them all for their contribution, please?
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not download our free app to access video and audio files on the go? Just visit our website, therSA.org, and follow the links to the RSA Vision mobile app.